Maybe you're pretty handy around the house and think nothing of repairing a leaky faucet or replacing a light socket that doesn't work anymore. But fixing modern appliances or electronics? Yikes. Not only are our modern gadgets complicated, the people who make them often don't want us to fix them. The makers would prefer to have their own stores and staffs perform the repairs. It's led to a right-to-repair movement of sorts in which some items loom larger than others, like farm tractors. The big machines that plow and plant and harvest are expensive and tricky to repair, and many farmers are blocked from being allowed to repair them. A right-to-repair bill got introduced in the California legislature this year, but it didn't get very far. Let's talk to somebody who is very much in favor of repairing things and legislation to defend people's right to repair things. Kyle Weens is the co-founder and now the CEO of iFixit, the free online repair manual. Kyle, thanks for joining us on The Exchange today.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Let's start with your background. How did iFixit get started?
Well, you know, I got my start in the repair industry working at an Apple repair center. And then when I was at university, I was trying to fix my computer and struggled. Was looking for a repair manual online, and I learned that the manufacturer had sent legal threats to anybody that put the service manual online. So I decided, well, that's kind of frustrating. And I'd already figured it out. You know, the first time you open something is the hardest. So I figured I'd take it apart again, take pictures, I put them online, and my new service manual, if you will, got very popular. So we've been doing it ever since.
Well, that's interesting. So you essentially were part of what you now consider something like the dark side then. I mean, you worked at a place that did repair the instruments under the official authorized repair contract.
Yeah, and I had an idea of what they had access to. It's pretty much, it's a PDF service manual and an ability to buy repair parts. It's not that challenging for any given product, but you put that together across the entire ecosystem of all the products that we own, and if you have that little obstacle where it's a little bit harder to figure out how to open something, then those kind of little annoyances add up over time.
I'm really curious about you said you got legal threats for you know, somebody threatened to sue you for putting a repair manual, or other people got threatened with lawsuits for putting manuals online?
Quirk, you know, we have copyright to protect creators like yourself and musicians, but what's been happening is manufacturers are using copyright to protect works that were never intended to be copyrighted in the first place. And so they're claiming these service manuals are creative works rather than something that they have to create internally for maintaining their products themselves. And so they're sending copyright DMCA takedown notices to anybody that puts their service manual on the internet.
So this is really along the lines of intellectual property now, is how they're regarding the manuals.
That's what they're saying. They're saying the instructions of, you know, remove these screws, disconnect this cable, that now that's some, you know, vast proprietary intellectual property, when really it's just the information you need to keep your thing running.
All right, let's move on and talk about the farm situation here, because first let's understand what's going on with tractors. It sounds like they're much more complicated than they once were.
Yeah, they really are. You know, you get into a modern tractor and it's got air conditioning, it's got a stereo system. The interface to the tractor is a touchscreen, just like an iPad. They're pretty sophisticated.
All right, so if you buy a tractor new, I'm going to assume it comes with a warranty for repairs at the dealer, yeah?
Right. So you've got a warranty maybe for a year or for a couple of years, and after that, you're kind of on your own for repairs. And traditionally, farmers are used to doing those themselves, right? You change the oil yourself. If you need a new tire, maybe. I mean, even a lot of tractors have, you know, lifts and hoists in their workshop where they can work on these big equipment. But now there are repairs that farmers can do on their trucks that they can't do on their tractors. For example, if you have a brand new F-150, you can change out the transmission and calibrate the software in the new transmission just fine, but you can't do that exact repair on the John Deere tractor yourself. You'd be forced to go to the dealer.
Well, Kyle Weens is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He describes himself as a fixer doing his best to reverse the second law of thermodynamics. We'll explore that in just a moment with him. He is the co-founder and the CEO of iFixit, the free repair manual, online at iFixit.com. You can join the conversation on the Exchange and share your own story here. Was there something you tried to fix and got some information back from the factory or the company that said, hey, try to fix this and you're going to be in deep trouble? Well, if that happened to you, let's hear your story, or just give us a thought about what you think about the whole situation with Right to Repair. 800-838-3760. I got back into fund drive mode there for a second. 800-838-3760 is what you call to get onto the Jefferson Exchange, or you can send your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So, all right. So, you know, there's the idea that farmers are jacks of all trades. They have to have a lot of different skills to be able to run a farm. And so you mentioned that they're used to fixing their own stuff. If now they're switching to a system where they have to depend upon a dealer, I assume, to get out to the tractor rather than for them to get the tractor in, this sounds like a much more cumbersome process.
Right. And it really can be an issue around harvest time, where maybe there's a lot of equipment breaking down at the same time. And if you're not at the top of the list, maybe they can't get out to you today. Maybe they can't come out till tomorrow. Then maybe they don't have the service part, and you have to wait until the end of the weekend for them to ship you a new part. I got into the world of ag equipment repair because a friend of mine was in that situation. He had his equipment breakdown. He had a fairly high end. This is probably a $300,000 tractor. It costs more than a house. And it was just a sensor that was bad. And he had called the dealer. They came out. They looked at it. They said, "We're going to order the part. It'll be here in 3 days." And he says, "I need my equipment to work sooner than 3 days. And I know it's just the sensor that's bad. It's not anything functionally wrong with the equipment. Is there any way you can just bypass that sensor? Because the tractor just wouldn't turn on." And I tinkered with it, and I tried, and I learned that you can't do that without John Deere's diagnostic software. And that diagnostic software is only available to their dealers.
Ah, so this is the arrangement John Deere desires. So you have to come to the dealer to get just the stuff that will even tell you what is wrong with the tractor.
Right. They want to lock you into their service. And, I mean, they're making good money, right? It's $150 an hour. If your farmer's an hour away from the dealer, you're paying them for drive time. So minimum service call might be 3 hours. That's a lot of money, and they want to protect that market for themselves.
So John Deere comes up a lot in this conversation, but you know, it's not the only maker of tractors. Is this pretty typical, though, across the range of people who do manufacture tractors, that they have the same sort of arrangement with you need their diagnostic software and their people to operate it?
Yeah, unfortunately, this is pretty universal across the equipment industry. I'm really hopeful that we'll get one of the manufacturers that will break ranks. But right now, they've all been hiding behind their association, the Equipment Dealers Association, on the Equipment Manufacturers Associations, and so that they've been pretty uniform. And I think it's because they're all seeing, you know, a lot of times they'll make more money off the service than they do off selling the new equipment.
Ah, so this is a great revenue stream for them.
Yeah, and they want to protect their margins and their market going forward. And I think this is really an inflection point. It's the moment that we add these complex electronics into our products, whether it's a tractor or a home product like a refrigerator. The moment you add that complex electronics, you're kind of passing control. You start wading into the world of copyright, where like that diagnostic software is also protected under copyright.
And oh.
It passes the nexus of control from the consumer over to the manufacturer.
So I can imagine there are some people, I mean, I don't know if you've tried this yourself, but have you tried to put either the repair manuals or just share the software online for the tractor diagnostics or repairs?
Yes, if we got the software and we put it online, they could sue us for software piracy. So it's this frustrating situation. That's why we need a law, because it's, even if we have the information, it's not legal for us to share it.
Wow. So I can imagine that once you've figured this out on the farm situation, in addition to all the other things where people need to get stuff to repair it from the people who have the stuff, that this really struck a chord with you, with the farmers and the tractors, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, this is this overwhelming creep where we can't be self-reliant anymore, where we have to turn to an outside entity to take care of us. Really, I think, strikes at the core of what it is to be an American. This, if you're out on the ranch, you should be able to take care of your property yourself. And having to have this, you know, phone a friend for a lifeline situation if some piece of critical equipment breaks, or even something important like your refrigerator. I don't think very many of us would be happy if we came home tonight and our refrigerator wasn't working anymore. All of a sudden, that's a household crisis, right? And there's software and circuit boards and appliances now. The manufacturers are designing most modern appliances to only last about 7 years. And after that, they're expecting you're going to go back and buy a new stove or buy a new refrigerator, where in the old days, you could fix them no problem. So we're trying to see if we can get back to the way things used to be, where we were able to maintain our own products.
Is there anybody, Kyle, who is approaching this from a manufacturing standpoint, trying to do things differently and simpler? I mean, is there anybody who's sort of being the anti other manufacturers by making stuff that is mechanically simple without loaded up with the electronics?
Well, you know, there's an ecosystem that it takes to repair things. It's not necessarily the electronics that are the problem. It's that they are using that as an opportunity to stop access. So there are some manufacturers that do make information and parts available. In the cell phone world, Motorola just announced today that they're going to be the only cell phone manufacturer that sells repair parts directly to consumers. So if you need to buy a battery or a screen for your Motorola phone, they'll sell it to you, where Apple and Samsung won't. So that's a huge deal.
All right, that's a big change. We're talking to Kyle Weens here on the Jefferson Exchange, who is the co-founder and CEO of iFixit, the free online repair manual. He is very big in wanting people to be able to fix their own stuff, and it seems to get harder over time. And then we start talking about big-ticket items like farm tractors that cost $300,000, and John Deere et al. Want to make sure that you call their dealer out with their software to do the diagnostics and the repairs. Join us on the Exchange as we talk about right to repair, talk about things you might have tried to fix yourself in the past but wouldn't dare taking on now. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. It's really just a trend moving up to bigger ticket items over time then, isn't it, Kyle? Because I mean, remember the days when we used to be able to repair our own TV sets, but you know, for the really old ones among us, and that includes me, you can go to the drugstore with the tubes and stick them in a little tester there and figure out which one was blown and then replace that one and take it back and your TV would work again. That seems like a long time ago.
Yeah, although, you know, TV repair isn't as hard as you would think. The manufacturers are not helping you, but there's really only two parts inside the TV that can fail, and they're a lot cheaper than the screen. So it's possible to fix televisions, but I think we've been kind of brainwashed to think that we can't repair these things. And certainly it's not part of the ecosystem designed by the manufacturers to have people fix things. So you have to look at alternative sites like iFixit, and you get on YouTube, and you find repair information, and then you go from there.
So I mentioned the buzz line at one of your sites here, and you describe yourself as a fixer doing my best to reverse the second law of thermodynamics. What is that?
So this is the law of entropy. This is what makes everything in the world break down eventually. No matter how well designed a machine is, eventually something is going to break. Something's going to go wrong. And as we've added electronics to more products, they're just more complex, and so there's more individual things that can go wrong, which is why you see these appliances failing after 7 years. In my eternal optimism, I think that we can fight back, but just like it takes effort to keep a house intact as the elements are wearing at it, it takes effort to keep all the things that we have functioning and working. So what iFixit is trying to do is create an ecosystem, create information, parts, and tools so that people have the resources they need to fix their own stuff.
And does it feel like you're fighting for every inch you get in getting the manuals and the tools?
Sometimes it really does. I mean, what we have to do with repair manuals is we have a community of people that are taking things apart, taking pictures, and writing new manuals because we can't get them from the manufacturers, so we just create our own. And now iFixit is the largest repair manual in the world. We have step-by-step tutorials on how to fix anything from an iPhone to a skateboard. And we're going to keep publishing how-to guides until we get every last product documented.
Do you have a pretty good legal team?
We do, yeah. And, you know, I mean, we also, from an advocacy perspective, working on the right to repair legislation, we've got a lot of allies around the country. I mean, Consumer Reports is hugely in favor of the legislation. Digital rights groups like the Electronic Frontier Foundation really think this is essential to protecting our electronic future over the next century. So we've been able to gather a lot of allies, and we're careful that we don't cross the line ourselves, but in that not crossing the legal line, there's a lot of information that we're not able to give people access to that we'd like to. And that's where if we could get some legislation passed, it would really open the floodgates of access to service information.
So California took a stab at it this year. It didn't make it out of the legislature. It didn't make it out of committee, in fact, in the assembly. But what are there other states that have passed right to repair legislation?
Yeah, so the last state that passed right to repair legislation was Massachusetts, but it was limited in scope to automobiles. So remember I said that farmers can do repairs on their F-150 that they can't do on their tractor.
Right.
That's actually because of the Massachusetts law. In 2012, after Massachusetts passed their auto right to repair bill, the car manufacturers agreed to apply that law nationwide. So a farmer in California is benefiting from the law that Massachusetts passed 6 years ago, and that's why you can go and get parts and information from Ford and GM. No state has passed electronics right to repair, so this broader in scope, applying not just to not just to highway vehicles, but to farm equipment, medical equipment, and consumer devices, and that's what we're working on now. California was not alone this year. There were 17 other states that introduced legislation this year. Some of them made it out of committee. Some of them are doing study commissions right now, but none of them have passed yet.
None have passed.
Wow. None have passed yet, but we're working at it.
Okay. So now the legislation in California was fairly broad. It involved more than just farm tractors, for example, didn't it?
Right. Yeah, that's the idea, is that it's fundamentally the same problem whether you're working on a laptop or you're working on a tractor. You need parts, information, and the diagnostic software. And I mean, it might even be the same microchip in your laptop that's in the latest farm equipment. So what we have seen is the prototype that was laid out for us with Automotive Force worked very well. It's helped make sure that our independent mechanics are able to do their job. And it's time to extend that same system to other kinds of products.
So since it was a fairly broad bill in California, did that mean it created potentially more enemies, you know, cell phone makers and the like?
Yeah, absolutely. And the biggest opponent of rights repair legislation has been Apple. They really don't like this idea that you might be able to maintain your own products, which I find ironic because iFixit helps millions of Apple customers every month learn how to repair their stuff. Apple actually, we're completely comprehensive. We've written repair manuals for every product that Apple sells. So I don't think it would change the status quo very much with Apple, but they seem to think otherwise, and have been fighting it pretty hard.
So Kyle, for you in particular, is there a level of, I don't know, fundamental weirdness or something there? Because you used to work as an Apple repair guy, and then here you are having to challenge Apple to repair their stuff.
Well, I love Apple products. I think they do a fantastic job. They're really well designed. They're actually, like, the iPhone is designed to be easy to repair. But they have decided that they want a closed ecosystem and that the only place that you can get something fixed is an Apple store. And I don't think that's a good thing for civilization. I think in order to have a resilient society, we need more options. We need a more robust framework. And that means that you should be able to fix up things at your home. You should be able to take it to a local independent. And if you want to take it to the Apple store, hey, that's fine. That's an option too. But consumers need those options.
Let me ask our listeners again if where you stand on right to repair, if it's something you think we should have, and would you use it if it were available to you? Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Our guest is Kyle Weens, the co-founder and CEO of iFixit, the free repair manual. So the California legislation, what was that, AB 2110, apparently died in committee.
Yeah, it didn't make it out of committee because of some dirty tricks that Apple pulled. We're optimistic we're going to be able to rally around them next year.
Well, the California Farm Bureau got involved, too. I noticed that you wrote a piece for Wired indicating your displeasure with the CFB's involvement.
Yeah, so this is interesting. The National Farm Bureau has been very strong advocate in favor of right to repair legislation, and so have a number of farm bureaus across the country. The California Farm Bureau decided to sign a very, very limited memorandum of understanding with the ag companies, where they said that they would make some very limited information available, but not the full diagnostic software. And they convinced the California Farm Bureau to sign on to that agreement. And a lot of the other farm bureaus around the country have looked at that and said, that's really strange. They don't quite understand why they did that, because it gives the manufacturers a veil to say, oh, no, we're gonna provide this information, where they're not actually giving the farmers what they really need.
So do you buy the argument that this is just John Deere protecting its intellectual property?
Well, you know, that's a good point. It's really important if you have the amount of investment in R&D that goes into these products, that we are not requiring companies to give up something that will enable their competitors, or heaven forbid, enable somebody in China to knock off their product. But a service manual is fundamentally different than engineering documentation. This isn't the recipe to build the tractor. This is, hey, this is how you remove the wheel. This is where the diagnostic sensor is. This error code means that it's a hydraulic pressure sensor. That's the kind of information that we need. It's not engineering information, it's just troubleshooting information. And as long as the manufacturer is doing their job right and keeping their engineering secrets out of the service manual that's distributed to thousands of authorized technicians around the country, then this isn't going to be a problem at all.
All right. It's an interesting distinction, though, that that you're not going to use the repair manual to build a new tractor and therefore take some of John Deere's market away. You just want to fix the one that exists already.
Exactly.
So the bill is dead until the next legislative session. I mean, do you have sponsors ready to pick it up and introduce it again?
We do. We're expecting the bill will be introduced again. I don't know exactly who's going to be introducing it or in what committee, but we're in contact with a lot of folks in Sacramento that are planning on picking up the torch. And it's not just in California. I'm here in California. I'm excited about it, but we have folks in Washington, in Nebraska, Kansas, that are all planning on introducing the bill. I expect that we'll probably get close to 20 states again this next year. And I mean, as the momentum grows, this last Saturday was International Repair Day, and you had hundreds of organizations around the world and around the country celebrating and pushing for right to repair. I think that our probability of getting something done only goes up every year.
But is it still kind of against the mass of consumers who seem to feel like when the TV burns out, it's like, we'll just go get another one?
Yeah, well, I think that's a discussion that we need to have is, if you have a 60-inch TV, it's big and bulky. Is it more convenient to throw it away and deal with, recycling it and go and get a new one? Or to hire a local tech, you can get TVs fixed generally for half the price of a new one. So as long as we're willing to spend a little bit of money. Another way to think about it is let's say you go and you buy a new $600 TV at Best Buy. Where is that money going? Is it helping the local economy? Most of that money, I'd guess 80%+ is going overseas, is going to these Chinese manufacturers, where if you spend $300 to repair it locally, almost all of that value is captured locally. So if we want to build and grow our local economies, we're going to do a lot better employing service people. And this is a discussion I have with people a lot is, you have something that breaks, you're making the decision, how much does it cost for a new one, how much does it cost for repair? I think we should think about our neighbors and our local economy as we're making that decision. And if at all possible, maybe make the decision to err on the side of employing somebody locally rather than buying a new product.
All right. The right to repair is described by Kyle Weens, the co-founder and CEO of iFix. And Kyle, thanks so much.